Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors to order. I am going to ask Director Corona, would you like to lead the group in the flag salute this morning?
Ready?
Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would like to ask the board secretary if she would read the suggestions for a virtual meeting attendance and call the roll of the board, please.
To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. Roll call.
Thank you very much. Oh, roll call. Yes, ma'am.
President Pauley.
Here.
Director Corona.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
Director Armstrong.
Here.
Director Record.
Here.
And our legal counsel is here.
Very good. Thank you so much. April, do we have anybody wishing to do public comment this morning at our meeting?
Not that I'm aware of.
Very good. With that, we will go to the executive reports. Nick, I understand you are going to give the general manager's report.
I have one issue. I'm sorry. I'll bring to your attention on the call to order, but I was going to recommend that the board consider a motion to add another closed session item to the agenda on the basis of Government Code Section 549.54.2, which allows an agenda, allows the board to consider a matter that was not agendized if the need to take action arose subsequent to the posting of the agenda. And in this case, after the agenda was posted, it's come to the attention of staff that there's been some concern over some district facilities as a result of the fire in Hemet. And I recommend to the board that if we can add another closed session item pursuant to Government Code Section, in accordance with Government Code Section 54957A, which allows the agency to consider threats to the security of the provision of essential public services. I'd request if the board can consider a motion to add such a closed session item to the agenda today.
I'd make that motion.
Motion by Director Corona, second by Director Armstrong. Will you call the roll on that, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Thank you.
Very good. And on that note, I would just like, and I will take the liberty of speaking for the board here. I know because of the Fairview fire, we have had a lot of our employees work around the clock. And I want to just acknowledge the fact that when events like this happen, our Easter employees go to work and they don't clock out at 5 o'clock to do that. So I just want to say thank you for everybody who's been working that situation. It's unfortunately, a tragic situation that resulted in a few deaths and a lot of destruction of property. But I want to thank our Easter employees and folks involved in that. So,
President Pauley, if I could just say, staff very much appreciates that. It has been a very, very stressful last couple of days, not just for obviously Eastern employees, but some of Eastern's current employees that reside in the area. But as well as the emergency responders and the community out there, and it's still ongoing. So we look forward to providing more details as far as those events in our closed session discussion.
Very good. With that, Nick, would you like to give the general manager's report?
Actually, I wasn't planning on doing Joe's general manager report. The written report is in your packet. It's an update on a few ongoing items. I did want to just take this moment, again, with just a very brief update with regards to our ongoing efforts in working with the City of Paris associated with the potential consolidation of their water and sewer system. Just let the board know that we're at the point where we've pretty much concluded all the analyses and assessments that we've identified identified, from groundwater rights valuation to condition assessments and costs necessary to address some of the conditional issues associated with their system. All of that has pretty well been complete. We're still talking to the city about the details, make sure there's a full understanding of where we're at this point in time. John Adams and our finance team are there at the point where the structure of the financial model has been prepared to see what all this cost data input means in terms of, you know, financials, financial picture and potential rate impacts going forward. So we're at the point of sitting down with the city at a staff level, make sure everybody understands where we're at. We have currently we have the next ad hoc committee meeting scheduled. Our representatives is Director Slauson, Director Armstrong. We are trying to schedule some time on your calendars just internally to kind of walk you through that, so we're all prepared for the ad hoc committee meeting, which is currently scheduled for next week on the 15th. However, I just received word that Mayor Vargas has a conflict, and there's a suggestion that we should reschedule that, so we'll probably be doing that. We'll find a date that works. But this is all kind of coming to a head, at least to the point of understanding what all this means and what that financial picture looks like, and then looking at options going forward.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Nick, Mr. Adams, do you have anything for us this morning along the lines of finance?
No update, President Pauly.
Very good. Ms. Alexander?
Yes, good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I have one item this morning. On August 27th, elected officials, including President Pauly and Director Armstrong, and staff from EMWD, Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District, Rancho California Water District, and Western Municipal Water District, participated in the Joint Agency Water Supply Resiliency Workshop number 1. During this workshop, the project concepts that were identified back in January through the brainstorming session were presented in terms of supply options, storage, conveyance, and infrastructure needs. Through that process, we gained valuable input from all the participants, and we are currently preparing for our next workshop in October, where these list of, in essence, 12 project concepts will be evaluated and identified for advancement, a short list of those concepts, advancement to the next phase.
Very good. Thank you so much. And again, a great job by yourself and participating staff on that. I feel we're making great progress in coming up with other sources of water for the Southwest Riverside County. So thank you for your participation.
Thank you.
Matt, do you have anything for us this morning?
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to let the board know that as the drought continues, we do keep looking for opportunities to save potable water. And I know one area of interest is water that's used for grading projects for new developments. And so we've really been digging in on this topic and looking at temporary meters that we issue for various purposes. And so we found just over 300 meters that are currently using potable water. We're reviewing those to see if there are opportunities to switch those to recycled water. And we've also been having some internal discussions with staff on ways we can change our business processes to try and catch a lot of these projects much earlier, you know, before they're going to break ground, and see if there are other things we could do to get more of these meters onto recycled water to still conserve more potable for other uses. So, again, we put a lot of effort into this. We've got some more internal discussions coming to wrap these up. But just wanted to let you know we're putting a lot of effort in on this, and we'll be bringing an informational item to you later with the results of the rest of our discussions and study.
Very good. Thank you so much for that. With that, I'm going to change us up a little this morning. I know that Mr. Mosier is here to give us a SOPA update, and I would like to move item 5 up to next on the agenda if there's no objections from the board, so that we can hear from him.
President Pauly,
yes.
If I could just make a quick introduction Jeff Mosier, General Manager with SOPA, and David Rule, who's the Executive Manager for Engineering and Operations. They've graciously asked to join us here at the board meeting to have an opportunity to provide an update on SOPA and everything that they have going on. I just want to remind us all that SOPA is a joint powers authority. It includes five member agencies, which district Eastern District is one of those members. Interestingly, how SOPA operates under its JPA, and Jeff maybe will provide some more details and help clarify this, but pretty much the JPA mandates that everything that they do be done under a project agreement basis with a project committee, and as such, we have representation not only at the commission but on these project committees. And those committees, the most active ones that we're engaged with are Project Committee 22, 23, 24. That includes their roundtables, task forces, the brine line, and other aspects of SOPA's operations. Director Slauson, Director Armstrong, and Joe Muad are our representatives on those PA committees, as well as the commission. So there's a lot of ongoing projects and activities that we're very interested in and working collaboratively with SOPA on. The brine line, the operation and management of the Inland Empire brine line is one aspect, a core critical aspect that is extremely important to the district. If it weren't for the brine line, we would be very challenged to have our brackish groundwater desalination complex as it exists to date. So, again, just wanted to have an opportunity for Jeff and David to come and share what's going on in the SOPA world and how it relates to us. So with that, I'll turn this over to Jeff.
Very good. Good morning. Welcome.
President Pauley, thank you, Nick, and members of the board. It's good to be here. Again, Jeff Mosier, General Manager at the Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority. Nick did a great job with the introduction. The one other thing that I would mention that we benefit from is working with your staff. So at SOPA, we have 28 staff members. We're fairly lean, but a lot of our efforts, we coordinate with your staff, and that's a huge benefit for us and a huge benefit for the region in terms of managing some of these efforts on a regional basis. So it's my first time here at your board meeting. I've been at SOPA for about a year and a half, so I'm overdue. Okay, so I do advance it this way. So we're going to run through this pretty quickly, so if you have questions, we'll be happy to answer them. I'm just going to give you a little bit of background on SOPA, but we really want to give you some more detail on the brine line. And David Rule, who manages engineering and operations at SOPA, he's going to go over that information with you, and it's going to be on your dischargers, how we manage the brine line in terms of O&M and our CIP program. And we're doing some brine line studies will be useful for you to understand. And then I'll just give you a little bit more information on other activities. So in terms of SOPA, as Nick mentioned, we have five member agencies. They cover the watershed in addition to Eastern, Western Municipal Water District, OCWD, IUA, and Valley District. And SOPA provides a forum for them to be able to talk about regional issues, regional projects, be able to collaborate regionally. And that's a big part of the value I think SOPA brings, in addition to the brine line. We also, through our task forces and roundtables, we deal with a lot of other stakeholders. Part of that is with the regional board, the Santa Ana Regional Board. I know you have you two that you deal with. And the regional board really appreciates the efforts and the studies and the work that comes out of the task forces. It informs their basin plans and their work, and they're very appreciative of the work that we do in the watershed. So just in terms of how we're organized, Nick alluded to these project agreement committees, which is kind of confusing in a way, but I think what's important here is that Project Agreement 24 is the brine line, and so they meet separately from the commission, but it is part of our organization. We appreciate Director Slauson's participation on our commission, Director Armstrong as our alternate commission member, and in terms of PA 24, your GM, Joe Moawad, and David Slauson are the representatives. David Rule manages engineering and operations, and he has a pretreatment group and a operations group. So in terms of SOPA's vision, there's really three categories of things that we do. So we have the brine line. And as Nick mentioned, it's very important to the watershed in terms of export of salt, particularly the upper watershed. We have 9 groundwater desalters that altogether have a capacity of 50 MGD of treatment capacity in the upper watershed, which is the size of the Carlsbad desal plant, right? And that salt in the brine goes to OC San, our partner agencies, and out the ocean where it belongs. But a lot of our dischargers, other than groundwater desalters, are businesses that could only exist in the upper watershed if they have the ability to be able to discharge to the brine line. So it supports the economy in that way. The other thing we do is our One Water, One Watershed program. This supports our integrated regional water management program. I have a little bit more information about that because the future, we need to understand what the future of that looks like. And this provides a place to work collaboratively with stakeholders in the watershed. And then our roundtables, because we have this forum to be able to collaborate, we have roundtables on specific issues, emerging constituents, TMDLs. So we're able to bring folks together, work collaboratively to try to determine solutions to problems at hand. And those have been very successful. Some of them have been around for, you know, 5 or 10 years. So I'll have David come up and talk about the brine line, and then I'll follow up with some other activities that we're doing.
Very good. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the board. Thanks for having me here today. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the brine line. Jeff and Nick actually went into some of the reasons and purposes and benefits of the brine line. I'll get down into some of the more specifics. So as you see on the PowerPoint here, the watershed, the Santa Ana watershed is shown on the map. The purple lines on the map are the Inland Empire brine line. It's roughly 73 miles, plus you include an additional 20 miles in Orange County. So SAPA owns and operates that portion of the brine line, which is in San Bernardino and Riverside County, and then we own 30 MGD of capacity in the brine line that is in Orange County section, that 20 miles that I mentioned. Roughly, we average about 12 MGD of flow right now. We remove 500,000 pounds of salt on a daily basis. We have about 31 dischargers that have a direct connection to the brine line, and then we also have indirect dischargers. So these are dischargers that are not near the brine line that truck their waste to a collection station. There's 4 of them in the watershed. Eastern has their collection station in their service area. We mentioned the purpose behind the brine line is for desalter, groundwater desalter, their concentrate flow, and then industries that have a high saline wastewater. Jeff mentioned that OC San is a critical partner with SAPA through their conveyance, the 20-mile pipeline, and then also the treatment at their facility in Huntington Beach, where they treat the flow and then discharge it to the ocean through their outfall.
David, before you move off of that slide, I think it would be helpful just to put it in perspective. Can you indicate the location of our desalination complex and the route and the distance our brine discharge would travel ultimately to the ocean discharge point?
Sure, I do have that in a couple slides.
I apologize.
Laid out exactly how you just prescribed. Let me see, Vance. There we go. Not this slide, though.
Okay.
the next one after that. So in order to discharge to the brine line, you have to own or lease pipeline capacity and treatment and disposal capacity. So that chart there on the upper left shows who owns pipeline capacity and who owns treatment capacity in the Inland Empire brine line. Eastern owns 5.9, a little bit more, of pipeline capacity. So that's actual brine capacity in the brine line and also in OC San's portion of their conveyance system. You also own 3.5 MGD of treatment and disposal capacity. So this is capacity at OC San's treatment plant that they treat and then also discharge to the ocean through their outfall. Also on the graph below that, it shows our capacity lease program. This is for customers that aren't able to obtain treatment or pipeline capacity. So currently Eastern leases 0.5 MGD of capacity. And the reason behind that is because OC San wasn't selling treatment and disposal capacity at the time that Eastern was looking for capacity for their Paris 2 desalter. It is a $390 million distribution system, and in order to purchase 1 MGD of treatment and disposal capacity, so this is the capacity to treat at OC San, it's roughly about $7 million. Oops, sorry. So this is more getting to the slide that you're talking about. Okay, so just focusing a little bit more on Eastern's brine discharges, you have the Paris 1 and Paris 2 desalters and the Menifee desalters that discharge to the brine line. You have two indirect customers that discharge at your collection station. That's Indian Oaks Campground and then Infineon. Your brine discharge for fiscal year 21-22 was 900 million gallons of brine that you discharged to the brine line, which is about 50 million pounds of salt based on the TDS that is in the brine line from your dischargers. So also in fiscal year 2021, you spent $2.5 million to discharge this brine to the brine line, which comes to about 0.3 cents per gallon to discharge to the brine line. And looking ahead in fiscal year 22-23, when Paris 2 has a full year of operation, your discharge will be about 1 to 1.4 billion gallons and upwards of almost 80 million pounds of salt removed from the watershed. Looking over at the map, let's see, do I have a pointer? But on the right where the yellow line is, that is the lateral that Eastern owns and operates from the desalters, and that's the blue dot on the right. So that's roughly about 15 miles of a lateral that Eastern owns, that discharges into SAPA's system. We call it our Reach 5, and that's the line with all the dots on it that goes down to near Prado Dam and then goes into Orange County Sand's system for that 20 miles. So this is looking at that a little closer. So that's roughly about 29 miles from Lake Elsinore, where Eastern's lateral connects into the brine line. The value of that system is $121 million. So quite an asset that's in place to be able to take your brine and then discharge it to or take it to OC Sands facility and discharge it. We do quite a few activities on the brine line for O&M. We do pipe inspection. We look at our maintenance access structures. We have to do right-of-way maintenance within Prado. We have roughly about 6 miles of pipeline in the Prado area, and every year it gets overgrown and sedimentation gets over the pipeline, and we have to be able to keep that clear and to maintain access in case there's any type of emergency. We do line cleaning. We do valve exercising. All those pink dots on the map are valves, mainline valves that are on on the Reach 5 lateral. If there's ever an emergency or we need to shut down the line, those valves are vital in terms of stopping any type of flow that may go into Temescal Creek that pretty much runs along the entire alignment of Reach 5. So then there's other activities that we do. Our O&M budget is roughly about $12 million a year. And then we also have a CIP program. Currently right now, we have an RFP under development for our Reach 4B and our Reach 4. And those are parts of the brine line that Eastern discharges to. That's that orange line at the top and then the purple line over on the left. Those are vital portions of the system. That purple area there, that's the oldest part of the system, and so we need to get in there and make sure that the condition of that pipeline is in good shape. Our CIP is about $48 million over the next 10 years. So some of the activities or studies that we're doing, working on a master plan and a reserve policy review. So the master plan is our long-term planning document that looks at all our facility needs over the next 20 years. And then also it gives us the benefits and the ability to plan future growth and to maintain reliability on the system, which is critical. So we're in the process right now of going through the RFP process, and proposals are due later this month, September 22nd. And then lastly, we have our reserve policy review. Here we're looking at our reserves to make sure that they are adequate and meet the needs of SAPA and our member agencies. We're going through a process with all our member agencies. Mr. Adams here is involved. In several meetings that we've had in regards to reserves, we will have a draft report ready in the November timeframe, which we will be presenting to the PA 24 committee for their review and comment. And that concludes my section, and I'll turn it back over to Jeff.
Thank you so much, David. If you have questions for David afterwards on the brine line, we can address those. Just want to have one other topic on the brine line. So PFAS, you know, we're all worried about, and we're trying to understand better, you know, characterize levels of PFAS in the watershed. So we sampled our brine line for PFAS, and, you know, to no surprise, there was PFAS in there. We sampled 38 constituents. This just presents results for the two most well-known, PFO and PFOS, and they maxed out 130 and 170 nanograms per liter. That was probably where we were hoping it would be. We didn't want it to be thousands of nanograms per liter, and we didn't think it was going to be, you know, wastewater, traditional wastewater, you know, 100 or less. So this is useful for us to know in terms of working with OC San, because potentially, you know, this gets into their biosolids. They have to discharge to the ocean. They're tracking PFAS very closely. So we want to be a partner with them and understand what our contribution is to their system of PFAS. This will be an ongoing thing. And this relates to a larger regional PFAS study we're doing. This is all five member agencies at SAPA are collaborating, including OC San, on a regional study. This is actually an attorney-client project for reasons in terms of, you know, what the future legal scenarios would look like. So this would be a program where you could get updates in closed session, but that project is ongoing now. The first step is characterizing PFAS in the region, then you'll be able to understand maybe how to address that on a regional basis. So I do want to spend 1 minute on our IRWM program. So it's been very successful over the past 10 or 14 years. We've gotten $200 million in grants from the state under different propositions, Prop 1, Prop 84, in terms of funding for projects. Eastern has benefited from funding under that program. I listed them here. But the future of IRWM is in question, right? So it's kind of falling out of favor in terms of funding mechanisms on the state level. So I'm not sure if we have another proposition if there would be IRWM funding designated in there. And SAPA serves as the IRWM agency, so all the grant administration goes through us. So what we're seeing in terms of the state is that there's a lot of funding, and we've seen it in the current budgets, for things they're calling climate resiliency, right? And you see things in there that are normal, like recycled water, right, funding, other funding for programs that we're familiar with. But then there's going to be a lot of funding for climate resiliency. And what I would tell you today is that this is going to look a little bit different from funding just water projects. So when I think about climate resiliency and how the state is thinking about it, it's about resiliency on a community basis, which includes water. So it means new partners, different ways of looking at it. This is still being formulated. You know, bills are being passed. Programs are going to be developed. But this is something we're tracking at SAPA, and we want to understand better how we can position the watershed and the member agencies in SAPA for being able to do these things. So David will report back to you on how this looks as we work through it, but it is a question of what this is going to look like. So the other thing I want to mention, this is a great example of a regional project, the Santa Ana Conservation and Conjunctive Use Project. I'm sure the board has heard about this from your staff. It involves all our member agencies, takes advantage of excess water on the state water project, right, when we can get it, and we'll be able to move that water around and store it in different basins throughout the watershed. So Eastern would benefit from that, and this was funded in part through a grant, 84, part of our IRWM program. Eastern received $12.6 million to help fund your Mountain Avenue West replenishment facility, three potable wells, and some conveyance pipelines. But if we could identify more projects like this, this is a very special one, that would be great. But in terms of regional projects, this is a role that SAPA can help facilitate. So the last thing I want to mention to you is our cloud seeding program. So I want you to be aware of what's going on. You may have heard about it in terms of what we're doing, but it is a pilot program. And our commission has come down on this. They want to understand if this can be a benefit for our watershed. We don't know. So we're doing a pilot. It's going to be a four-year pilot to understand this better. So it involves ground-based systems that will put silver iodide up into the atmosphere during storms that are seedable. Not every storm has the right conditions for it. And that silver iodide has the same structure as ice. So water vapor would condense on the silver iodide. It would become heavier and fall as snow or rain. So that's the process. We want to understand if it works for our watershed. We're going to do a pilot. We want to validate the benefits of in the region of this. The target areas are in the mountains. There's four target areas in the watershed. The ground-based systems are the red squares. We're looking to get this program off the ground this winter. There's a lot of things that have to happen, but we're trying to accelerate it, get it in place this winter because of the drought conditions. If we can produce water, that would be a benefit. But there's a couple critical items associated with cloud seeding. One is the whole purpose of this pilot is to have an independent validation of the benefits, right? If we cannot show there's benefits, then we shouldn't be investing in this. We also know that this can get in the public eye. So you may get questions. So if you have questions, Director Slauson is here for you. You can always direct them to SOPA. We're doing a ton of presentations in the watershed. But, you know, the public, I mean, there was an article in the Riverside Press-Dispatch on this, and so it's something that could get legs, and we just want to be prepared for that. So in terms of Eastern, we have two sites on Eastern facilities. We're working out the details now in terms of how we're going to operate them and get them installed. So just want you to be aware there would be two of these units. One would be this cloud nuclei generator. One would be called an AHOG. We're working out the details on that now. So we'll end there. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here, and we'll be happy to answer any questions, Mr. President, if there are any.
No, great presentation. Really appreciate you coming out to Eastern today. Any questions from board members?
Yeah, I don't have any questions, but, yeah, thank you for the presentation, Jeff. Jeff done a good job since he's been there to Rich Holler's place. And with David Rule, he's always getting down to the nitty-gritty and tells us the specifics. But, yeah, I think, you know, it's a smaller agency, but there's a lot of work involved. And Nick's usually my liaison here. So I know that Eastern provides technical support as well. But good job. Thanks.
Thank you, Director Slauson.
Director Record, do you have any comments or questions for our guest?
Just a couple of comments. First of all, I feel fortunate that Eastern is a part of SOPA. It's a great organization and has really accomplished a lot and allows us to do some really great things. I've brought this up in the past, and I always find it interesting when we talk about cloud seeding. And as a farmer who used to grow onions, and Director Corona can relate to this, I get concerned about rain at the wrong time of year. So I don't think we're at a point where we can turn it on and off like we'd like to, but I'm just assuming there's no exposure to liability about, you know, somebody saying, well, geez, it poured and it wouldn't have if you hadn't seeded the clouds. So here's my bill for the damage to my property.
Yes, Director Record, excellent comment. So we have looked into this. We have a suspension policy for cloud seeding. So if there's a storm that's too large or if there's too many storms in a row, we would not seed those storms. So we don't want to contribute to any flooding. We do have liability through the operator. So that's been covered. But these are excellent questions, and we need to be able to address them.
So thanks for being here today. I appreciate it.
Director Corona?
Yeah, just to piggyback on Director Recker's comments, the onion thing. I get from your comment was that when storms are coming, and for the most part, storms are coming in the wintertime. I mean, a perfect example is this weekend. It's supposed to rain, and you know this would be harvest time for onions, and you do not want rain during harvest. So I would assume that you would not cloud seed in the summertime when we've got, you know, 3/4 of an inch to 1.5 inches of rain coming in.
Excellent question. So we would only seed during the cold season, so between November 15th and April 15th. And I don't have the information in front of me, but I think that avoids a lot of the harvesting times. But if there were other specific times, it would be interesting to know during that winter season, because we would not cloud seed during the summer or spring.
Good.
I think those are good points. But could you also mention, haven't you coordinated with the flood control agencies?
We have, right? And so that was a requirement from the commission that we talked to the flood control, and that was an excellent suggestion. And they did have comments, as you can suspect. And one of them is there was the Apple fire, right? That was 2 years ago. And Riverside Flood Control is concerned that they don't want us to contribute more rain to potential runoff in that region. So we're looking at that. So we may not target that area in the first year. We're not sure we're going to work with them. We're getting information from U.S. Forest Service on the conditions up there. But, yeah, the flood control folks, they're supportive, and they've been involved in some of the technical aspect, but at the same time, they're flood control, right?
Right. So you're going to be scheduling rain in the wintertime every 2 weeks so that we won't have to have a water bill. Is that right?
I would love to be able to do that, but we can only seed storms that are forming, right? And so if the conditions are right, dark clouds, that's when we would cloud seed. But, no, yeah, we can't seed out of nothing, right?
Darn.
Well, thank you again. Thank
let
you
me,
for the
let
time.
Me, can I ask one sure. final one? And, again, we just opened up our Paris to DeSalter. We're able to provide, potable water now to 15,000 new homes or existing homes. We could not do that, obviously, without the brine line here. So do you ever do economic studies of what the economic impact of the brine line is for the area? Or
so that is something I've asked David to look into.
Okay.
What is the economic what value from an economic point of view does the brine line provide the watershed? And, it could be sub-watersheds or individual. But that would be a great question. It hasn't been done, but it would answer the question of why are we investing in the brine line or that type of thing.
I just think from a public relations standpoint to understand that this investment, which most people can't see or understand, but it has great economic impact. I mean, the fact that we can now use groundwater and turn it into potable water has some dollar value to it that we're not importing energy, et cetera, et cetera. So I just think in the future, if you do that, please report back to us or through Director Slauson that I'd kind of be interested in what those numbers may look like.
And there's folks at UC Riverside, some economists there that, would be very interested.
I'm sure Chris Thornton would be happy happy to do this for SAPA. So, again, thank you for coming today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. President.
All right. That was a very, very enlightening report. We will now get back on track on our agenda. We're at item number 3, which is our consent calendar. Do we have any members of the board that have any questions or like a separate vote on any items? I have one, and that is item C on our consent calendar. And I don't know if Jolene Walsh is on the phone. I know that there was some recent activity in Sacramento regarding virtual attendance and virtual meetings. I don't know if you have an update on that for us.
Sure. Good morning, President Pauley and the board. There is a bill that's sitting on the governor's desk that's awaiting signature. It's AB 2449 by Blanco Rubio that would extend the deadline under which remote board meetings are allowable. So this would extend the deadline to January 1st of 2026. And unfortunately, it does not waive the requirement to pass a resolution every 30 days, so that resolution would continue to be required to allow remote board participation, but it does extend the deadline. The other benefit is that it does not require board members who are participating remotely to post their physical location prior to remote participation. And we will provide an update once the governor takes action on that bill.
All right. Thank you on that. And I guess the other question I have, and this is my concern, I have no problem with virtual attendance, But does this action that we take every 30 days, is that because of the COVID emergency? Is that still in the language? Or
yes, the remote meetings that this district and, frankly, a lot of public agencies in the state are doing is pursuant to AB 361, which amended the part of the Brown Act that allows for teleconference meetings. Prior to the pandemic, if you were going to have a telephonic meeting, there were certain restrictions. One of them was just what Jolene just alluded to, is that if you're going to have a telephonic meeting and a director is remotely located, that has to be in a public place. It has to be noticed and accessible to the public. Also, the law required that if you're going to have a telephonic meeting, that at least a quorum of the board be present within the service area of the district. The original executive order by Governor Newsom relaxed those restrictions, but that expired, I think, September 30th, 2021. In response to that, and again, I think a resurgence of, at that time, I don't know if it was Delta or Omicron or whatever it was, but the legislation that was passed by the legislature was AB 361, which amended those and relaxed those provisions. It currently has a sunset date of January 1, 2024. So we can continue to do that until January 2024. And what Jolene just alluded to was this amendment to extend it 2 years. But to directly address your question, Director Pauly, there is a requirement in the AB 361 statutes that require that the board make a finding that the state of emergency that was declared by the governor is still in place, which it is, and that a meeting in person could pose health risks to some attendees. And that finding must be made every 30 days.
Okay. No, I appreciate that. I just I have a little heartburn over continuing the COVID emergency, but I would like to see the Brown Act amended, or maybe Eastern could help do that. Because, again, I think with modern technology, and in certain cases, the telephonic meetings are both for the public to attend. I mean, we have put the investment here at Eastern so that we can make it easier for the public to watch our meetings online. I think all of that is good stuff. But the idea that we're still doing this under the guise of a COVID emergency gives me a little personal heartburn. But with that, I will, if there are no other questions or concerns on the consent calendar, I'll look for a motion in a second.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. That will bring us to our action items. We will go to action item A, which is to authorize the general manager to negotiate a letter of interest for participation in the Doheny Ocean Desalination Project.
Good morning again, President Pauly and members of the board. The South Coast Water District in Southern Orange County is currently advancing the Doheny Ocean Desalination Project. The initial phase of this project has been defined as 2 MGD with an ultimate capacity of 15 MGD. South Coast Water District has identified a need of 2 MGD within their service area, leaving the remaining capacity available for potential partnerships. Over the last several months, EMWD staff has met with South Coast Water District as well as Metropolitan Water District of Southern California to explore what a potential partnership in this project might look like. Most recently, on October 24th, EMWD staff met with staff from South Coast Water District and the Municipal Water District of Orange County to further discuss a potential letter of interest, what those considerations might entail, as well as potential water supply benefits that EMWD could recognize in participating in the project. With that, this morning, staff is requesting authorization for our general manager to enter into negotiations for a letter of interest for EMWD's participation in the Doheny Ocean Desalination Project with South Coast Water District and Municipal Water District of Orange County. If approved, EMWD would also work with South Coast Water District and MODOC to establish an ad hoc committee. With that, I'd also like to introduce Mark Cerna. Mark is the Chief Engineer and Assistant General Manager for South Coast Water District. He is currently on the line this morning. Mark, would you like to say anything?
Yes, thank you, Linnea. Good morning, Mr. President and members of the board. So I very much appreciate you bringing us here and considering this item. So on behalf of our board and our general manager, Richard Taco, he could not be here today. He planned to be here this morning. He had a medical emergency, so he couldn't make it today. But we definitely appreciate you working with us, and we've had some very very good conversations with the staff, with Maya, Joe, and I think we have a really good opportunity here to look at some potential partnerships down the road. So we very much look forward to working with Eastern and your staff. I'd be happy to answer any questions if there's any for me.
That is Mark.
Any questions for our guest, Director Armstrong?
No, not for our guest.
Okay. No, thank you, sir. If you don't mind hanging on the line for just a moment until we wrap this item up in case a question arises. But do you have questions for staff,
Director Armstrong? I wanted to just start with just saying thanks to our staff and to the staff at South Coast. I know for a year plus you've been having dialogue on this, and I think it's just a good result to this point. I fully support this effort, and I think that it's along the lines of Eastern's past, where Eastern has really, past boards have really been innovative and at the forefront of water resiliency and looking out for their service area. And I think this is another leading edge thing along those lines. And I think there's other benefits, not only to supply for our region and for Southern California, but for inland agencies that want to try to participate in something like this. This is a way to kind of help carve out a pathway to make this happen. So I think there's some ancillary benefits to it as well. And so I just want to thank you, and I support it. I know there's going to be more discussion, but I would move this item and recommend moving this item forward.
All right. Do we have other questions? Let me give Director Record a chance to chime in if you'd like to.
Yeah, I would. Thank you, President Pauly. And I support going forward with this. I just want to make sure that whatever our general manager negotiates will come back to the board for approval. I have some concerns about different aspects of it, but I don't think with what's going on today, we can ignore any possibility of a new water supply. And I agree with Director Armstrong that we are considered a leader when it comes to water management and supply. So thank you.
Director Record, yes, a letter of interest will come back to this board for consideration before execution. This is just to authorize the negotiation.
Great, sure. Thank you.
Director Corona, any?
No, I don't have anything additional. I'll second Jeff's motion.
Okay, so we have I do have a question on it, but we do have a motion on the floor by Director Armstrong, a second by Director Corona. Director Slauson, no questions. So just a technical point. So this authorizes the general manager. If we do come to some resolution, I believe we are talking about putting an ad hoc committee of this board together, and that would be down the road, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. I thought we had discussed that. So down the road, we will look at putting an ad hoc if we get a formal agreement with other agencies on that. So with that, we have a motion. We have a second. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes a 5-0. Thank you very much for that. We'll move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize a contract with GES Biotech LLC for $556,000 for the Temecula Region Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Biofilter Media Conversion Project and an additional appropriation of $623,000. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Yes, so I'll be presenting on the Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Biofilter Media Conversion Project. But before I get into the presentation, I'd like to thank Steve McCants from GES Biotech for joining us this morning. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you joining us. I'll quickly provide a background of the project. Some of this might sound familiar. This is the third project of its kind in the last 4 years. I'll discuss how the media, the organic media that we'll be replacing, how it impacts our the airflow through our biofilters, and how the fouling contributes to nuisance odors. I'll discuss the engineered media alternatives, the engineered media proposals, and discuss that process, go over the project cost, the schedule, and the timeline for the project, and then finally our recommendation. So this is the Temecula Valley, our TVRWRF biofilter. It captures and treats foul odors. The biofilter is currently loaded with organic media or wood media to remove that odor. Over the 5 years that the media has been in place, the wood media has decomposed and consolidated in the filter. As a result, the airflow through that filter, the biofilter, is impeded through the filter, resulting in nuisance odors, as I mentioned. This is a plan view of the biofilter at Temecula. You see the main foul air manifold there and the foul air diffuser lateral pipes. Those are 8-inch pipes. As part of the project, we are going to be modifying those 8-inch lateral pipes to improve our ability to inspect and maintain those pipes. This is a cross-section view of the biofilter, the 30-inch foul air duct that then enters into the media, and the 8-inch lateral diffuser pipes that connect to the 30-inch below that media. This is another cross-section view. The layers of the media in that 38-inch or 30-inch foul air duct. As you can see, the wood or organic media layer is on the top. We have a soil media below, and then a lava rock media at the final stage there. This illustrates the compaction that has occurred and settling that has occurred over time. As you can see, it's has settled several inches and has compacted several inches below the top layer of that media. As a result, there's uneven air distribution and obstruction of that air to effectively go throughout that media and has resulted in nuisance odors. This is just another illustration of the fouling that has occurred as a result of that decomposition as far down as 12 to 14 inches into that third layer of that lava rock bed. So this is the engineered media alternative. As a result of it not being an organic media, it doesn't break down. Therefore, it maintains its porosity and allows for consistent airflow over time. The stable and consistent treatment of odors is allowed to also occur because of the lack of breakdown that occurs with the organic media. The warranty of this media is 10 years or more, and it's made from 100% recycled glass. June 17th, we advertised the RFP for the engineered media to our 402 contractors and suppliers. We received two bids back. One was from GES Biotech, and the other was from BioRem Environmental. GES Biotech had a total score of 97, and was awarded that bid at $556,572, with an exceptional lead time of 6 to 8 weeks, as opposed to 16 weeks from BioRem. We did add an additional $10,000 to the authorization to cover for freight. As you know, the cost of freight has significantly increased. One thing that is different about this presentation as opposed to the previous presentation is that we have separated the contractor that will be doing the installation of the biofilter media and the structural rehabilitation, as there will be some additional rehabilitation work that will take place that we wanted to ensure that we separated that and highlighted that in our future presentation for awarding the contract to that contractor. This is the cost summary for the project. GES Biotech engineered media with additional Crater Max and the nutrients for that media comes to $556,000 and the additional freight, $556,572, with an estimated $10,000 for staff support. And 10% in contingencies brings our total estimated project cost to $623,000, $623,230,000. The timeline for the project is to, we estimate that we'll begin delivery and arrival of engineered media in November, start the removal of the media in the first cell in December, complete the cell one in January, start February for cell two, and complete the project and rehabilitation of this part of the structure in April. It is the recommendation to approve and authorize execution by the general manager or his designee of the district standard form of contract with GES Biotech LLC for the engineered media for the Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Biofilter Media Conversion Project in the amount of $556,570, an appropriation in the amount not to exceed $623,230. I'd be happy to take any questions at this time.
Excellent presentation. Are there any questions from our board?
Yes, I have one question. The you mentioned there's a 10,000 credit, I guess, for freight or added to it.
Yes.
Was that something in the bid document that allowed for that?
It's not in the bid document itself. It's to cover any additional freight. As you may remember, we incurred some costs in the San Jacinto project that due to increasing costs, unforeseen increasing costs for freight and trucking hauling costs, we had to come back to the board for additional funds for your approval. So we incorporated that into the overall budget in the event that there were incurred costs for freight.
Okay, so the $10,000 allowance is if they need.
Correct.
Then that would be already approved. Okay, sounds great. I'll
move
approval. No one asks questions.
Second.
I was going to make sure, Director Record, do you have any questions on this item?
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. So moved by Director Corona. Second by, which one are you?
No, he moved it. I second.
I'm sorry. Moved by Director Slauson. Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Once again, I'd like to thank our guest for coming for the item today. Always appreciated when we have people in attendance for board items. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we are going to move to item C, which is to approve and authorize award of contracts for Citrus 2 tank, $2.6 million, Menifee Village tank, $1.5 million, Mountain View tank, $2.4 million, rehabilitation and additional appropriations, $9.1 million. Good morning. You're going to walk us through us spending a lot of money on tanks this morning.
All right, thank you. Good morning. My name is Edward Cerna. I'm here. I am a principal civil engineer in the engineering department. And again, I'm here to present the Citrus 2 Menifee Village Mountain View tank rehab project. We'll be recommending an award of construction contract to J. Cole & Coating and Unified Field Service Corporation. With us here today, we have a rep from each contractor. We have Chad Johnson with Unified Field Service
thank
Corporation.
Thank you for being here.
And we have Janelle Cornyn and Byron Wells with J. Cole & Coating.
Thank you for being here.
So as part of this district's effort to provide reliable water service, water storage tanks are inspected on a regular basis. The inspection looks at exterior and interior coating system, cathodic protection system, and the condition of structural members. In 2021, staff prioritized the need to rehab the Citrus 2, Menifee Village, and Mountain View tanks. So the Citrus 2 tank is a 7 million gallon tank located in Paris. In the bottom picture, you can see the corrosion at the top of the center column. The Menifee Village tank is a 5 million gallon tank located in Menifee, and here you can see corrosion throughout the roof structure. The Mountain View tank is a 7 million gallon tank located in Marietta, and here you can see corrosion along the roof rafter. So we created a project to rehab these tanks. The project scope includes recoating the interior and exterior, safety improvements, and replacing the cathodic protection system in the tanks. The district authorized an agreement with Webb Associates for final design of the Menifee Village and Mountain View tanks, and Dudek for the final design of the Citrus 2 tank. In June of this year, the district advertised the tank projects, and in July of this year, we received contractor bids for those projects. As shown in the summary of bids, J. Colin submitted a bid of approximately $2.6 million for the Citrus 2 tank. Unified Field Service Corps submitted a bid of approximately $1.6 million for the Menifee Village tank. And Unified Field Service Corps also submitted a bid of approximately $2.4 million for the Mountain View tank. Staff also requested proposals for continued engineering service support from Dudek and Webb Associates for the amounts listed in the table. If this recommendation is approved, the contractor will begin in September during the low-demand months and complete the project no later than April 2023. And so our recommendation today is execution of a construction contract for each tank with J. Colin and Unified Field Service Corps for the amounts listed in the chart. We also recommend additional appropriation of $9 million to fund the construction of three tank projects, which bring the total estimated project cost to approximately $11.5 million, and administrative award of other necessary contracts to complete the tank rehab projects. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Questions.
Director Reckert, any questions?
No questions. I'll move the recommendation.
Moved by Director Reckert. I have one quick question. These are all potable water tanks, right? Not recycled. Okay. Very good. So,
second.
Moved by Director Reckert. Second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Reckert?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Again, thank you for being here this morning to support the item. Appreciate the attendance. Passed 5-0. We will move on to item D, which is to approve an authorized agreement with Endurana for $574,000 for the design of Mission Canyon 2 pump station replacement project and appropriation amount of $824,000. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauly, fellow members of the board. I'm Greg Kowalski, your engineering manager. I'm happy to be here to present the Mission Canyon Pump Station Replacement Project. And before I get into the presentation, I'd like to introduce our guest from Ardura, Mr. Ryan Houston.
Thank you for being here this morning, sir.
So getting into the background of the project, we continue to have a partnership with Riverside County and a collaboration. And with that, we received American Rescue Plan Act funding for this project. That agreement was completed, and we'd like to move this project forward. The project, coincidentally, is located in the East Valley, east of State Street along Gibble Road. The proposed project is a master plan project, and this particular project will provide improvements which will be consistent with our current standards, bring everything up to standard, as well as provide a more robust and more resilient facility going forward. On the right is the proposed pressure zone, which shows the proposed booster station on the west-hand side. Again, we'll be providing a replacement booster on a new site, as well as a looping pipeline. So again, the project scope includes those two elements, the booster station and the pipeline. And with that, we're looking to advance a prefabricated pump station. We're going to leverage our past experience with the Post Road Hydro Booster Station, which was a prefabricated pump station. By doing so, we'll be able to do a turnkey facility to drop the booster station right on site once it's completed. It's just a special order. And again, this will help us advance this project in an expedited manner. Again, the photographs on the right really illustrate what a prefab booster station looks like. This is our Post Road project, and this particular facility will fit in well in the Gibble Road area. As far as the design effort goes, we reached out to Ardura Engineering. Ardura was previously competitively selected via our annual as-needed services contracts. They have a successful track record working for the district on similar work, and they're the engineer of record on our Post Road project, which was a successful advancement. The design services for this project are fairly typical. However, I'd like to highlight we do have an optional task for full-scale pump station design if needed and confirmed during design. However, we feel the prefabricated pump station will be a big benefit and will advance. And with that, that optional task would result in savings to the project. Ardura has selected local vendors to do some of the investigations for survey and geotech, and will utilize as-needed services contract for other ancillary services for environmental and potholing. With that, we look to hit the ground running. If approved today, we'd like to get started immediately with design and the site acquisition process. The site acquisition will be a bit of a long lead for us, but again, we want to move forward as quickly as we can and to finish the project late next year. We'd soon after advance the project to construction and then finish well before the funding deadline in late 2026. With that, our recommendation today is to advance a contract with Ardura for the design of the project in the amount of approximately $575,000, to advance other ancillary contracts to complete this work, and then three, our request today is appropriation of about $825,000, taking us through the bid phase of the project. With that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
I had one question. You mentioned vandalism in your report. What kind of vandalism are we getting on these facilities?
The proposed facility that's out there is kind of exposed to the elements and somewhat open, so the new facility will be walled in and in a tight facility to prevent people from getting into the site. Vandalism in a remote facility, such as, you know, painting and doing things to the
painting,
the site,
shooting
so.
At it.
Shooting at it happens in these
all those types of things.
Well.
So
yes.
Okay, so this will we're going to add a little extra infrastructure to make sure we protect our facilities.
That's correct.
Perfect. Okay. Any other questions on this item, Director Record? Any questions, or would you like to move the item?
No questions. I'll move the item.
Moved by Director Record.
Second.
Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Again, thank you to our guests for being here today. Looking forward to working with you on this. We will now go to item 6 on our agenda, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to pass.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. That will bring us to item 7 on our agenda this morning, which is our calendar review. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. There are two events for your consideration this morning that I'm presenting to you. One is the Boy Scouts of America's annual Distinguished Citizen Dinner, which is Thursday, September 29th at 6 p.m. The second is the Menifee State of the City Address. That will be Thursday, October 20th at 8:30 in the morning. The information for those events is in your calendar packet review. On page 2 is the board members' master calendar for the next 2 weeks. Please review this information and let me know if there's any changes or add-ons for the next 2 weeks. On the top of page 3 are the upcoming conferences events with participants. On Saturday, September 10th, we have two events that evening. One starts at 5:30 at the Western Science Center, Science Under the Stars. And the second is the Marietta Wildemar Award Celebration at 6:30. Following the next week, September 14th through the 15th in Anaheim, is the BIA Biz Show. On Thursday, September 15th, is the County of Riverside State of the District Address in Temecula. And Friday, September 16th, is the Orange County Water Summit in Anaheim. And on Thursday, October 13th, is the annual Rivers and Land Awards Gala. So all those flyers are at the back of your packet. And continuing through page 3, we have the board and board committee meetings scheduled through November. Just like to make another note that the executive committee meeting scheduled on Thursday, September 15th, has been rescheduled to Wednesday, September 28th at 8:30 in the morning. Otherwise, all other meetings are on schedule. At the top of page 4 are the interagency meetings through November, in which they are all are on schedule. And then November has a couple holidays. We've got November 11th for veterans, and the 24th and 25th are observance of Thanksgiving. So, and lastly, to remind everybody, board members, that the conclusion of today's meeting, there is the solar phase initiative ribbon ceremony photo opportunity over at the Paris facility at the conclusion of today's meeting. So are there any questions regarding the calendar review?
Oh, if you could just make sure I'm down for the Boy Scout Awards.
Most definitely.
I appreciate that.
That concludes my report.
All right.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much, Jennifer, for that. We will go on to board members' attendance reports. We'll start with Director Armstrong.
Okay. The Joint Agency Resiliency Regional Program was covered and concurred with what was commented there earlier. And I would just say that overall, I think it's a really good regional effort, very positive with everybody working together and discussing alternatives. So I thought it's a real good effort. Had the update with our general manager, the retirement trust committee met, and I think the update on that is that all of the funds for the retirement trust, the initial deposit of those funds were all made, and now we're making our annual contributions to it as well. All of the OPEB money has been moved from CalPERS to the retirement trust, and so all the funds are there. Staff is working on developing a funding policy on how those monies will be used in the future, and that will come back and at some point in the future to the full board for review. So that was a good meeting. And then the Paris American Youth Soccer opening ceremony, I attended that with our staff. We had our hydration station there, and it started out really slow. They were doing their ceremony and talking, and then they announced every team, and that team proceeded to go off the field and come right to the hydration station and line up. And everybody got water. Everybody came through there with their parents, their coaches, and all the players. And, I mean, we were keep putting more sleeves of cups into that thing to get water to everybody. I thought it was really, really, it's the first time I've seen that really at an event. And it was really well, I think really well appreciated by the community. And our staff did a great job, so. That's it.
All right, very, very good, and I will chime in. That hydration station is one of our best PR efforts, I think, that out there. So, Director Corona?
Okay, yeah. Went to the Rancho Water District meeting. It was a late meeting. It was held after the economic forecast event at South Coast Winery. I made a point at the meeting to bring up the fact that I believe that all the districts in the area working together, I've never seen it like this. It's, you know, everybody is working together. I think, besides the fact that, you know, we're in a drought and everything, but I've never seen everybody working together as hard as they are right now. Monthly meeting with the general manager was great, and then the City of Murrieta event, that was a good event. It was interesting. Of course, it was the beginning of the evening. It was over 105 degrees, and they wouldn't let us inside, so everyone was outside cooking, but finally got inside, and that was a good event also. That's all I have.
All right, very good. I did attend the Joint Agency Resiliency Program, which Linnea talked about. And again, I'm really pleased of how that is going, and I hopefully will come up with some programs that will help Southwest Riverside County. Him at San Jacinto Water Master meeting, pretty perfunctory, just kind of our normal discussion items there. Our Retirement Trust Committee, as Director Armstrong indicated, that is going very smoothly. And I thank Mr. Adams for all that he has done to make sure that is working. Again, I think this is overall going to be good for all of employees in the long term. So I'm glad we moved in that direction. The Riverside Water Task Force meeting was Very interesting one. The Craig Miller brought a there's a guy on television, John Oliver, I think, that's kind of a comedy skit, and we did that was actually about water and drought resiliency, and so he tied that into a water discussion. It was one of the more unique water task force meetings we've had in a long time. So it combined popular culture comedy with the drought conditions. So very interesting there. Good meeting with our general manager and state of the city from Marietta, as Director Corona indicated, was a little. It got off to a very hot start, and I was not able to stay for some of the presentation, but was certainly did a good job of networking out in the heat with many of the community members. Got some good feedback on our Los Alamos Hills project that we are going to do with the city. So that was good. Director Record.
Oh, just one meeting, August 23rd in Metropolitan, had a board workshop on diversity, equity, and inclusion that lasted several hours. I thought it was a good effort and could have been better board participation, but the people that were engaged were very thoughtful, and I know that Eastern staff was there, so that's good. That's my report.
All right. Thank you very much. Director Slauson.
Sure. Thank you. I attended the Moreno Valley State of the City Address. It's the, sort of the mayor's presentation. And several council members were there, as well as surrounding council members from adjacent cities. Attended Santa Ana Watershed, SAPA. It's sort of a pre-meeting for our joint meeting with Orange County San. And on the 26th, I also attended the task force meeting, and it was entertaining. They also had Bill Hassenkamp from, he's a water master for San Bernardino Basin, giving us an update on their water facilities, their basin capacity. And then attended the Orange County Sanitation SAPA joint meeting and learned that they were bifurcating their treatment for in their treatment plant for the desalter versus the other sewer system, and working on the NPDES permit compliance, and also discuss PFAS impacts. That's it.
All right, very good. Appreciate that. Do we have any director's comments or future agenda items? Director Armstrong.
Just a comment and a quick question. All this discussion about how hot things are in the heat. I know when it's this hot, our field and staff is out there in some incredibly hot weather, you know, and not ideal conditions. And so I just want to say thanks to them. I know it's hard work when it's like this, and just appreciate it. And so that's my comment. My question is there anything that we do in this heat? Do we shift schedules or anything to try to get them out of the heat?
Yes, Director Armstrong, thanks for recognizing the conditions that our field staff work in. And yeah, we have safety policies and protocols in place, ensuring that crews are, you know, are hydrated. There's plenty of water. That they take the time to find a cool place, a shaded place, to, you know, just recoup from the heat. And there's continuous warnings and updates, reminders that go out. In fact, just yesterday we were informing our supervisors and crew leads to ensure that our workers are working safe in these conditions.
Thanks.
Any other director comments?
I think.
Randy, oh, I'm sorry. Randy, Director Record, go ahead.
Thank you. And I echo Director Armstrong's comments about appreciating the work that staff does under these conditions, and especially with the fire. Matt brought up earlier the fact that we're using potable water for construction grading, and I am kind of shocked that we have that many meters out, and it just seems to be sort of a business as usual under these conditions. I've made Joe aware of a couple of situations where I wouldn't call them complaints, and I rarely get any feedback from the community, but people that are familiar with our system know that there's recycled water close to where grading's going on with potable water. Seems to me that we used to have a policy that when we got to different stages of our water supply contingency plan, that was an issue that was dealt with specifically, and I don't know if it's still in our plan or not, but I would just appreciate that staff is looking into it, and I want it to be urgent, and I'd like to have something back by our next board meeting. And I don't know if it's a committee meeting or where it would be appropriate, but this really needs to be looked at because we all know these conditions are so bad that we just can't, it's just not business as usual. So thank you for that.
Yes, Director Eckert, yeah, we'll be prepared for the next board meeting with more details. But yeah, staff have very diligently been working on each one of these situations and working as hard as we can to get as many of these projects using recycled water. And if the initial activities can't be put on recycled water at a minimum, we're working to compromise with developers to at least switch them over to trucking recycled water for dust control once that's able. And so we're working diligently through the list and some of the largest users who are closest to recycled water pipelines to see if we can get some of those converted as soon as possible. And then, as I mentioned, we have some other ideas in our internal processes to try and catch more of these much sooner so we can take more extensive efforts to get more of these projects converted. So, yeah, definitely the next meeting we'll have more for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Director Corona.
Yeah, I wanted to add on to Director Rector's comments. I had gotten a call from a local guy who's doing a project out in the San Bernardino area, and I guess they cut off the potable water, and he was asking what to do. And I said, contact. I gave him found a number for his local sewage treatment plant. I said, I'm sure that they've got recycled water over there. Go get it from them. And that's what he did, and he was very appreciative. They had plenty of recycled water available for him to use. But anyway, my other comment was if you're wondering what Director Armstrong does during his off time, if you're a big YouTube watcher, he has established a YouTube channel, Retirement Life for Us, correct?
That's it.
And I really suggest that you go on that channel and see what he's up to. It's a really fun channel, and you can tell that Jeff is not doing water business while he's on his off time, really. But him and his wife, Anna, are having a great time, and you should all take a look at it. I've seen all his shows, and they're all really good. And just want to put in that plug for you. Subscribe to his channel.
That's the subscribe button and the like thing. And
that's
the
right. Thing. Subscribe and like.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right. With that, and I will do so. I understand we do have a need for closed session legal counsel.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Under item 9A, potential litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9. Potential litigation concerning one case. Also, given the board's adoption earlier in the agenda to add an item to the closed session event agenda, that would be item 9B, conference with legal counsel pursuant to Government Code Section 54957, subsection A, consultation with counsel and risk management concerning the provision of essential public services.
All right, very good. Before we move into closed session, April, if you could, I understand we are going to take the board over across the street for a photo op on our solar project. Before we move into closed session, can we get the details on that?
It is just a quick trip over to the Paris plant where the solar panels are, and we're doing a quick photo shoot with a few representatives from our energy company and then the board members that are able to make it. So after closed session, Kevin Pearson will...
And we're all going separate cars, et cetera.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And you're going to be over there to help coordinate. Kevin will be over there.
Kevin will be there.
Okay. Kevin's being thrown out in the heat today. Very good. Okay. With that, why don't we change over to closed session?
President Pauly, if I could request, could we take the added item 9B first, and then I can coordinate staff?
Let's do Doug first. Okay, We are back in open session. I'm going to ask legal counsel if we could get a report from our closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met in closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss one item of potential litigation. Instruction was given to staff on that matter. The board also met pursuant to Government Code Section 54957, subsection A. The board received a presentation. No formal action was taken regarding that matter. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. With that, we will stand adjourned to our next regular meeting, which is Wednesday, September 21st, 2022, at 9 a.m. Thank you, everyone.